continuing our Proverbs series. And today we're talking about a really important topic, and the topic is repairing friendship. And over the years in youth ministry, I have seen a lot of friendships in disrepair, as you might imagine. I know there's probably some in this room right now where maybe you're sitting over here and that person is sitting over there, right? And that probably has happened numerous times to many of you. And we do talk about community a lot. We even talk about friendship a decent amount. But we rarely talk about what repairing friendship looks like. Because most of us just kind of go, you know what? I'm tapping out. I'm done. This is over. And we don't even try or make an attempt to bring repair to friendship. Because we're just like, you know, there's always someone else I can be friends with. And we don't really put the effort and time into it that we might need to put into it. So we're going to be talking about a really big topic today. And I've said before that you've got to think about friendship as kind of like this four-lane highway. So the left lane is like where your close friends ride with you, so to speak. And left lane on most highways is supposed to have the fewest vehicles. But in Texas, that's not the case, right? It's usually the most crowded because everyone's trying to go fast. But it's supposed to have the fewest vehicles. Everyone's going faster typically in the left lane. But that's where your closest friends ride with you. And then there's the middle lane, more casual friends, other middle lane, acquaintances. And then there's the right lane, which is more impersonal relationships. And the right lane tends to get clogged with traffic most of the time. And there's a lot more people in that lane. Now, cars sometimes can change lanes, right? A longtime acquaintance might later become a close friend, or a once close friends might become just an acquaintance, and that's okay. Someone could be traveling with you in the left lane, and for whatever reason, they decide to move to the middle lane, maybe their choice, possibly, or maybe even the right lane. They might even take an exit ramp, and you've got to be gracious and understanding with people, understanding that you can't, like, make someone be friends with you. If you're a person that tries to make people be friends with you, you're not going to have any friends, all right? It's not going to work out for you. So for this message, we're talking about the left lane, close friends primarily. So we're going to answer three questions today. First, what is a friend? And then what kills friendship? And then how do we repair friendship? So what is a friend? Proverbs chapter 20, verse 6. We'll see some verses here. Many a man proclaims his own steadfast love, but a faithful man who can find. So there are many people who proclaim love for their friends, quote unquote, right? They throw that word around a lot. They throw the word love around pretty casually. But what sets someone apart is their faithfulness in a friendship. So are they a faithful friend? That kind of person is rare and hard for us to find. You see, friendship is different than family. You guys are going to find out really quickly over the holiday season. You know that family is assigned to you. That it's not a choice, right? It's assigned, and it's just, you're born with who you're born with, right? But friendship is different than family. There's no choice with family, but friends get to choose each other, right, mutually, and have a friendship. And there are many people that talk a good game. They might make promises, but they don't deliver. They don't follow through on promises. But a faithful friend does the opposite. They are someone they keep their promises, they're faithful whatever they say, and they're a faithful friend. And then Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. So what is a friend? It's someone who is constant. This means that they have a commitment to the friendship. Now you might ask, what about the traffic lane analogy where you can move in and out at will, or maybe even take an exit ramp? But we're discussing just mainly close friends today. And at times we see friendship as no commitment, because that traffic lane analogy thing, that describes like what happens, not always what maybe should happen in friendships. So at times we see friendship as just no commitment, like no effort. For many of you, if you think that friendship requires effort, that's when you say, you know what, I'm going to leave the friendship because this should not require hard work. That's how many of us think. That's not really a biblical idea when it comes to friendship, though. So how do we know friendship is constant? Well, this verse tells us, whenever it withstands suffering. How do you know if a friendship is a friend is really there for you? They're constant and loyal in your life. It's whenever you encounter suffering. Whenever all you have to offer them is a burden and they stick around. like you know that's a constant friend, someone that is consistent and constant in your life. So a true friend knows who you really are and doesn't walk away from it. I want to give you two warnings here, though. You can't be overbearing. We can't be overbearing in friendship. And we can't make someone feel guilty for not being as constant as we want them to be. You can't do that in a friendship. So what do we do when someone isn't constant? You've got to be gracious with that person, because sometimes being constant means that we apologize when we're not constant. You understand that? That being a consistent friend means that you can own it and apologize for it whenever you're not being as consistent as you might want to be, or that they might want you to be. And then Proverbs 27:17 says this, iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. I want you to picture a metal object that is just kind of pulled out of the ground, and it's just not really refined. It's not really been shaped into anything. It's just a chunk of metal, not helpful for anything. So how does it become useful? Well, if we take another metal object and we rub those objects together, it's going to create friction. Sparks are going to fly. And sometimes this needs to happen in friendship. One person confronts the other person in love, of course, and there's going to be some friction and sparks might fly. But if you never say hard things, or if they never say hard things to you, the friendship may not be as deep as you think it is. So real friendship is like sharpening the blade of a sword. And by ourselves, if we just stay isolated and by ourselves, we become dull and we lose our edge. You need friends in your life that are not going to flatter you, but they're going to refine you and help shape you into Christ's likeness. Proverbs 27 says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. So friendship is someone who is constant. It's also someone who's honest. So I want you to look at the contrast in verse 5. It says, open rebuke is better than hidden love. So what does that mean? Well, if someone that we love is heading into foolishness and you refuse to tell that person, then you are hiding love. You are concealing love for them, from that person. You're holding it back from them. And we do that because we might care more about what our friends think of us than what they need from us. If we hold back a necessary rebuke from someone, it's like hiding medicine from a sick friend. There are some people that all they do is they just kiss up to you. They tell you just what you want to hear. They tell you how great you are. They never rock the boat with you. And they might seem like the greatest friend, but Proverbs says they're an enemy. So a good friend loves enough to give faithful wounds and loves enough to do it with kindness. Now, rebuking someone can be kind of tricky because we're not sure how they're going to respond. If they're a left lane friend, they might jump across four lanes of traffic and take an exit ramp. But they also might do this. They also might move in even closer when given the opportunity. That might happen as well. Ray Ortland, he says this, when iron sharpens iron, it creates friction. When a friend wounds you, it hurts. There's a difference between hurting someone and harming someone. There's a difference between someone being loved and someone feeling loved. Jesus loved everyone well, and some people felt hurt, but they were not harmed by him. They were loved by him. When someone speaks truth to us, it's going to hurt. How many of you guys have ever had a friend come to you, or even just someone that you respect come to you and say some really hard things? I mean, it hurts, right? The initial impact is like, ugh, I thought I had that part of my life under control, and this person's confirming that I do not, in fact, have that under control. And it's hard when someone comes to you and confronts you and says some truth. And the thing is, you know it's true, and you're trying to convince you, like, no, what they're saying is not true, but you know it really is true, what they're saying to you. And it's very difficult to hear. And it doesn't always feel loving, but that person is loving you well in that moment. Jesus, if you look at the life of Jesus, Jesus spoke very bluntly to people. But he always did it as an act of love. And if you look at friendship in the world, Friendship in the world never confronts sin, but they justify it. You know, they believe in unconditional acceptance. You know, you do you. As long as you're happy, it doesn't really matter what you do with your life, as long as you're happy, it makes you happy. That's not an example of biblical love. And at times, I think in the church, we expect friendship in the church to look like friendship in the world and just be like, it's easy, no difficulties. No one's ever going to confront us in our sin. And if someone does, we think that they're trying to harm us. We say things like, you know, I feel so judged. I'm going to leave this people group. But real friends are willing to wound you to help you, and they do it for your good. Kelly Needham, she writes, if friendship ceases to take sin seriously, it has ceased to function as God intended it. Regularly making excuses for sin and avoiding moments of rebuke is a sign that intimacy in the friendship has become more important than intimacy with God. So, are there friends that you need to have a conversation with? Are there friends that right now you know they say they're believers, but they're walking into patterns of sin? They're not just struggling and wrestling with sin. They're walking in patterns of sin in their life, and you know it, and you've just kept the peace, not said anything, you don't want to rock the boat. Are there people that right now you need to have conversations with? Are there people that right now you need to talk to because, like, you're not okay with them? Like, they've done something against you in some way, or you've done something against them. Are there people like that that you need to have conversations with? And instead of making excuses and avoiding these moments and maybe being closer as a friend, you've kind of pulled away. You've pulled away from that person. So that's what a friend looks like. So what kills friendship? Because, you know, at times people will confront our sin and we misinterpret what's happening and we think they're trying to harm us, but they're actually wounding us for our own good. Proverbs 17, 9. Hey guys, can we stop with the phones up here in the front, please? It's actually distracting to me, so that's what I'm trying to get at here. All right, 17:9, here we go. Whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. So gossip kills friendship. We see that, I think, from this text. I know we just said that we should be honest with our friends, especially whenever there are patterns of sin. So this will sound like I'm contradicting myself, but I don't think you should confront everything all the time. Like when I was doing the part of the talk today where I said you should confront sin, some of you were like, oh yeah, I like doing that. I like being the one that confronts sin. I like, that's, he is preaching to the choir. Like, I like that message. Well, hang on. There's a balance here. I don't think you have to confront everything. I don't think you have to confront every offense. Like, if you have a friend that literally confronts everything you do, would they still be your friend? No, they would not. So you see the other side of this verse, that love covers an offense, right? Now, let's be practical here, because I don't think that Jesus, think about the life of Jesus. Do you think that he confronted every sin with the disciples all the time? No, he did not, because he knew what they were even thinking, right? We see that he knows what people are thinking. So do you think Jesus, because if that's what he did, his entire 3 years would be spent doing that with like 12 people, and that's all he'd be doing, right? So we know Jesus didn't confront everything that he saw with the disciples. He let some things go, right? So when do we confront? Well, I would say if it's a clear sin being committed, like there's stealing, there's sexual sin, there's lying, it's a black and white, there's no gray, it's a black and white sin, I think it's worth addressing. Or if the issue puts your friend in danger, like an abusive relationship, or there's suicidal thoughts or self-harm going on, you should say something, if not to them, but to someone that can truly help them. Another sign that you should say something is if the issue is creating this bitterness in your relationship with them or causing you to avoid your friend, then you might need to say something. But I don't think you confront every little thing. that that person says and does all the time. Because when you do confront sin, you've got to be willing to cover it in the same way that Jesus does, in forgiveness, grace, and mercy. But instead of offering forgiveness, many of us do the opposite. We turn and we gossip about it. Do you see the connection here with the lack of forgiveness? Do you see that in this verse? The lack of forgiveness leads to what? Gossip. Do you see that connection? That if you struggle with gossip, it's probably because you're not doing the first part of that verse, which is you're not willing to overlook an offense. And that's what drives us to gossip, and that's what can kill friendship. A rule for that I try to apply to myself, and I don't fulfill it very well most of the time, is this. A rule for gossip. If the person you're speaking with isn't part of the problem or part of the solution, then you probably shouldn't be speaking to that person. The person you're speaking with is not part of the problem or part of the solution, then you shouldn't be speaking with that person. If you got a problem with someone, go talk to the person, not about the person. That's the most important thing for us to remember as it relates to gossip. Proverbs 11, chapter 11, verse 12. Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. We used this verse a few weeks ago, I think. So ridicule kills friendship. I think many of you all have seen that in your own lives. I mentioned a few weeks ago how guys, I mean, we know, the girls know this to be true. The guys love to ridicule each other, don't they? That's like a pastime. It's like a hobby for most guys. Is they make fun of each other, they ridicule each other, they make fun of each other. And at sometimes we've got to know how to take a joke and not overreact to everything. But for some people, this is all they do. They just ridicule people. And making others feel small makes them feel big. Like maybe they struggle in a certain area of their life, and so they feel like they're insignificant, they lack their identity, and so they want to make someone else feel small so they can feel bigger about themselves. And this to me is always an identity issue. If you struggle when you run your mouth constantly and ridicule people, make fun of people, that's an identity issue, has to do with you and Jesus. That's what that's about. It's not just like, hey, turn off your words. It's not just about that. That's coming from a place of identity in your heart. It's coming out of your mouth. Those words are coming out of your mouth, overflow of your heart. And I think it has to do with how you see yourself, not just how you see them. So they don't feel important. So to boost their own worth and value, they take shots at everybody else. Proverbs chapter 26. Next verse here. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. Insensitivity can kill friendship. I think I've used this verse before as well, but insensitivity is the opposite of empathy, which is to feel someone else's pain, to kind of put yourself in their shoes. So if our joking causes someone else to get hurt, it's not a joke, it's sin. So I love the image. I love this image in this verse because the picture is, if I brought someone here on stage and, or just in regular life, whatever it might be, if you picked up an arrow and you like jabbed it into someone's chest and they're like bleeding out in this moment, right? And then they're like, why'd you do that? And you're like, I was just joking. That doesn't work, right? Like the person is injured, they're hurt. They're bleeding out in front of you. And you're like, I was just kidding with you. You're like, but they're bleeding out, right? That doesn't make sense. But emotionally, that's what we do though, right? Like you've hurt the person. You've hurt them emotionally. And you're like, I was just kidding. I was just joking. No, but you injured them. You injured that person. So insensitivity can kill friendship. Someone who's not empathetic is going to struggle to have real friends. Or long-lasting friendships. They might be short-lived, surface level, but they're not going to last very long. And then chapter 25, verse 17, it says, one of my favorite verses of Proverbs, let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. I love that verse. That's a great verse for all the introverts in the room, right? Put that on a welcome mat right in front of your front door. Love that. So this is the person that lacks empathy once again. This is the person that doesn't know how to read the room. They can't detect that they've been there too long. They've been in your house and it's been 3 days. They've not gone home. They've not left. And there's all the hints like, hey, we don't have any more food, right? We're out of food, sorry. And they're like, that's cool. I like being hungry. It's fine, right? They don't mind. Like that person like can't take the hint that it's time for them to go home. They lack empathy. They don't know how to read people or situations. Listen, friends need time to be together, but they need time to be apart. A good quote by, this guy was not a believer, I don't think, but Ben Franklin said this, guests like fish stink after 3 days. True story. When I was young, I hated seafood. I was the kid that would go to the seafood restaurant. I grew up on the East Coast. We had a lot of seafood on the East Coast, but I hated seafood when I was a kid. My whole family loved it. They go to a seafood restaurant. I was the kid that would order fried chicken and French fries at the seafood restaurant. And they cooked it in the same oil, so it still tasted like seafood sometimes. But listen, today I love seafood. My wife makes the best seafood I have ever tasted in my life. And when she makes it, we know we still have to eat it within 2 days because on day three, it smells like a dumpster. Right? That's what happens with seafood. It goes bad very quickly. Something can be great on day one or two, but things change on day three. Some people don't understand that that principle applies to friendship. Have you ever had a friend stay with you on the first day? It was just great. But the next day, like things took a turn, didn't they? That's what happened. And you grow weary and you're like, I like this person, but not on day two or day three, right? In high school, one of my closest friends, I was friends with a couple other guys. We were kind of in this like circle of friend, a friend group. One of my closest friends, he was like, I'm going to Hawaii. And his parents were taking him to Hawaii. And he was an only child. And so he didn't have any brothers and sisters. So his parents said he could take like one friend to Hawaii on this 2 week vacation, fully paid for. And I was like, so you're going to take me, right? And he was like, no, I actually asked our other friend Paul. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So he takes our friend Paul and they go to Hawaii for 2 weeks. They return back and he's like, oh my gosh, I hate Paul. And I'm like, you should have taken me. You should have taken me to Hawaii. But here's the reality though, if I'd been with him for 2 weeks, the same thing probably would have happened to our friendship that happened with he and the other guy, right? They worked it out. They ended up being fine. But the idea being, we can wear out our welcome with people. And if we don't know how to read the room and understand that, like, we need some space apart, we're going to also kill friendship. This person needs to be sensitive to that, understand the situation. Proverbs 17:14. The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so quit before the quarrel breaks out. And then 17:19. Whoever loves transgression loves strife. He who makes his door high seeks destruction. So quarreling kills friendship. I know you guys don't use the word quarrel. Like none of you say, well, how was your day at school? Not good. My friend and I, we had a quarrel at school today. That doesn't happen in your conversation. I get that. But that's a biblical word. It means to constantly argue, always feuding with people. So in verse 14, the image is like a dam with a leak. You may have seen those catastrophic images on TV whenever there's a lot of rain somewhere and there's a dam and there's a leak in the dam and it's just kind of trickling at first and then suddenly it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and so the whole dam just collapses and now the whole plain is flooded with water. That's the picture being described here. As the water leaks out, the hole gets bigger and bigger, leading to a catastrophic flood. So we're going to have disagreements and some conflict in friendship, but if it's not resolved quickly, it leads to great destruction. Verse 19, it points to people that are always in conflict, the people that love conflict. If you're always caught up in drama with people, that's a problem, and you're not going to have many long-lasting friends. And the friendships that you do have will be based on the drama you're creating with other people. Then you go back to those friends to gossip about it. This person makes their door high. That means they isolate themselves when they live this way. And they'll be alone eventually. So that's what can kill friendship. Now let's get to how do we make repairs in our friendships. Chapter 28, verse 13, it says, "Whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will obtain mercy." Confession and repentance is the start of restoring friendship. So whenever we sin, we tend to do what Adam and Eve did. We go and we hide because we're afraid of judgment. But a better way is to bring it into the light and to receive mercy. So we can't simply just confess and just keep doing the same things over and over again, because forsaking here means to abandon, to reject, to leave our former way of life. That's what's being described here. And then look at chapter 25, verses 21 to 22, where it says, "If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he is thirsty, give him water to drink, for you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. So overcome evil with good," is the big idea there. Now, that's a surprising verse for us to read, right? When someone wrongs you, they expect you to do the same thing back to them. So this verse is saying, no, surprise them with kindness. At times we think that taking the high road is just to ignore the person, act like they don't even exist. But this goes beyond that. Whenever we read verse 22, the first half seems to make sense. Like if you read just verse 21, "If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he is thirsty, give him water to drink," I would expect to read that verse in the Bible. But then verse 22, "For you will heap burning coals on his head." That's the part that's surprising to hear, right? Someone said amen. Who said amen to that? That's. So what is being said here? Why? Some of you are like, I like the burning coals part, but not the first part. So why does it say it like this? This sounds so strange. You know, I once thought this was like a passive aggressive way to get revenge. You know, kill them with kindness, right? As this verse describes. Several years ago, I had this across the street neighbor who was, he knew I was a believer and I was a pastor, and he didn't like us. He was very kind of mean and cruel. And we tried to be nice to this neighbor, but he just wasn't having it. And one day I was like, he's across the street from us, and I was blowing the leaves into the street. Cause, you know, I rake most of my leaves, but some of the leaves, I just kind of blow them into the street, and the water just seems to kind of take them away, and it's like magic. They just disappear, right? And he just saw me blowing some leaves into the street, and he didn't like it. He comes out on his side and starts blowing the leaves from his side, like, towards my side. He's, like, with this mean look in his eye, and I was like, Jerry, we can talk about this. What's going on here? And he starts cursing at me and going crazy in the street. And I'm just like, I said, Jerry, these are just leaves. I can take care of this. I'm so sorry. And so I went and got like a broom and a dustpan. And I was making sure he saw everything I was doing in front of his house. And I got right up next to his curb and I was just like sweeping. Looked like I was in pain. I was like trying to make him feel the pain of my work. You know, I was just sweeping the leaves into this dustbin and got a trash bag out. And after about an hour and a half of that, Jerry softened up a little bit, and he came outside, and we had a conversation, and he just seemed different after that moment. And that's an example that we're talking about, like that when you show someone an act of kindness, right, that it has a way of, again, it's to him, it may have felt like some coals at first pouring on his head, like, oh, why is this guy being so nice to me? But then after a while, starts to warm up a little bit, he starts to be a little bit kinder, and we had some conversations after that moment. That's what this verse is talking about. And I'll admit to you that my actions on the outside may have looked right. My heart was still not right. I was like, I want to get back at that guy, Jerry, right? And this verse is not about being nice on the outside while inwardly despising this person. Many believe this refers to like an ancient Egyptian ritual where the repentant would carry coals on their head as an act of repentance. And some think that this verse is implying that the idea is to bring this person to repentance, and that's why you show them kindness. That's why you do kind things for them. Ray Orland says, "The best revenge is love. Whoever is mad at you, if you relieve the pangs of his hunger, you will increase the pangs of his conscience. You might bring him to repentance. You might save his very soul. Isn't that reward enough?" It's a great question for us to wrestle with. So we find the strength to love this way by looking at the gospel and looking at the life of Jesus. And you know that to be true. That's the resource that you have that you can tap into to love in this way, in the same way that Christ did. I am going to give you a couple of pointers on helpful tips for a difficult conversation with someone to get really practical here today. And there's 5 points we're going to make. The first point is, when you go to a friend and have a hard conversation, first, tell them why you're speaking up. It might be something like, listen, I love you, I value our friendship, and we need to have a conversation. Something that simple can go a long way. The second point, take responsibility for your own sins. So you can usually think of some things that you've done in relation to whatever they've done or not done. And you can say, hey, you know, as I look at myself, here's what I want to own. Here's what I want to say to you. And so you own your sin makes it easier for them to own their sin. If you do it by example first, they might actually follow that example as well. And then number 3, you can share your concern or your hurt. One of the things that I tell people is don't assign motives and say what you think the intent was behind what they did or said. You just say, here's what you did, and here's how I felt about it. That simple statement can go a long way, and you're not assigning motives and getting into the weeds of like their heart and what they meant and all that kind of stuff. That's too much for them to deal with. Let them just own their action and hear how it made you feel, and keep it as simple as that. And then number 4, share when these specific instances happen. So get specific. You can't just be like, you know, I just think that you're this kind of person. You're like, okay, well, can you give me some examples? No, not really. I just think that about you. You're like, well, that's not helpful, right? Like, you've got to have some examples of like what they may have done or said that makes you feel or think this way. And then lastly, give space for them to process and ask questions. So it may not be that you solve it all right there. That's okay. But you just say, look, I've given you a lot. So if you need space to think and pray about this and just like we can get back and talk about this later on, give them space to do that. Don't expect them to solve it all right there on the spot. Let them have the grace to go and think and pray about what you've said and return back for more conversations later if need be. So we're going to have some breakout discussions now, and we're going to try to do this in a, we'll figure it out. But freshman guys over here,